From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Thursday, December 21st, 2017. And on this day, state corrections officials respond to a negative review of the Long Creek Youth Development Center in South Portland. A rare December algae bloom has a dramatic impact on shellfish harvesting in Casco Bay. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
The Maine Department of Corrections says it's taking steps to improve the Long Creek Youth Development Center in South Portland. An independent audit recently found serious safety and other deficiencies at the juvenile correctional facility. But DOC administrators say they are filling staff vacancies, hiring more mental health workers, and undertaking a new initiative to treat kids with serious mental illness in the community. Susan Sharon has more.
At some point last summer, Maine Governor Paul LePage called the leaders of the Departments of Corrections, Health and Human Services, and Education into his office, and he gave them a mandate. Corrections Commissioner Dr. Joseph Fitzpatrick says he asked them to overhaul the juvenile mental health system in the state so that kids with mental illness get adequate support in their communities. Fitzpatrick says recent surveys found more kids than ever were arriving at Long Creek with complex mental health issues. More than 40% have been in residential treatment.
There was a significant number of those kids having been in psychiatric hospitals, had major psychiatric diagnoses, had been in therapeutic group homes. They were kids coming in the door with a level of mental health need that we had never seen before.
So in the past 4 months, under the leadership of DHHS, Fitzpatrick says those departments are working to fulfill the governor's mandate. How they'll create the system and what it will entail remains unclear. At a briefing with reporters on Thursday, Fitzpatrick directed all questions about the mental health initiative for youth to DHHS. Calls and emails to the department were not returned, but here's one advocate's quick take on the task at hand.
The children's mental health system, children's behavioral health system in Maine is really in disarray.
Peter Rice is the legal director for Disability Rights Maine, who says having the three departments collaborate on a new approach for mental health treatment for youth is welcome news, but there are big hurdles to overcome.
There's not enough providers. There's home and community-based services across the state. There are some parts where kids have been waiting over a year for Section 28 services, which are services for kids with autism and developmental disabilities.
Still, Rice says the most important thing is to address kids' mental health needs and to avoid improper placement at Long Creek. Commissioner Fitzpatrick, whose background and training is as a psychologist, says it's been his priority even before an audit by the Washington, D.C.-based Center for Children's Law and Policy found that chronic staffing shortages, combined with the severe mental health problems of youth, were creating dangerous and harmful conditions and practices at Long Creek. Those include high numbers of youth engaging in self-harm, frequent assaults, and the inappropriate use of force. Staff were getting burned out and leaving. Others were being required to fill in. And more than 5,000 hours of overtime was logged so far this year.
The audit report said you really have to recruit and put a major effort in recruitment and retention of staff. So we have brought our staff to a full contingency where the positions we need are staffed.
Since July, 30 vacant line staff positions have been filled. In addition, 8 acuity and mental health technicians are coming aboard. Those are new positions to address mental health needs inside Long Creek. And Fitzpatrick says they are already making a difference.
I think we're safer today than we probably were 3 months ago, 6 months ago. Some of that is because the staffing is up. Some of it is because of some of the changes we've made.
And, says Fitzpatrick, there will be more changes to come. The DOC plans to privatize special education at Long Creek after the audit found it was not meeting its legally mandated obligation for special education services. But Allison B.A. of the ACLU of Maine says one of the biggest problems identified in the audit is that most kids at Long Creek are there for low-level offenses. They're kids as young as 13, she says, who are not getting their needs met.
It's great if a commissioner can take isolated steps to improve conditions in this moment, but the fundamental truth is that there are no band-aids to fix this. The only way to really solve the problem is to do what science tells us, what all the experts tell us, which is to get kids out of prison. They don't belong there, they're not safe, and we can do a lot better.
The current number of youth at Long Creek is 68. That's down from a high of more than 300 a decade ago. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
A new threat to New England's shellfish industry seems to be establishing itself more firmly, and regulators are trying to stay ahead of potentially deadly blooms of toxic algae, blooms that may be driven by climate change. Fred Bever reports on Casco Bay, much of which has been closed to shellfish harvesting for nearly 3 weeks.
30 years ago, four people died from amnesic shellfish poisoning after eating cultured mussels from Canada's Prince Edward Island. The mussels contained domoic acid, a neurotoxin produced by a class of algae called pseudonychia. The toxin turned up in PEI mussels the next year, but for decades after that wasn't heard from again on the eastern seaboard. But in the fall of 2016, toxin-bearing pseudonychia bloomed off downeast Maine in some areas that previously had never seen an algae bloom, as well as off Massachusetts and Rhode Island. Regulators in Maine have closed downeast shellfish harvests twice since then, and now, for the first time, a pseudonychia bloom is plaguing a large swath of Casco Bay. That's a worry here on an aquaculture raft anchored off of Windy Falmouth.
So right now, this is our declumping machine and grading machine.
Matt Moretti shovels bushels of juvenile mussels to be returned to the sea until they grow to market size.
It's fed by a conveyor that we just actually installed. We're really happy about it.
Moretti, who co-owns Bangs Island Mussels, is not so happy about the ongoing algae bloom, and he's keeping his fingers crossed that it won't affect his harvest. The company already suffered from an extended closure in the spring when a different bloom, the annual red tide that Maine has long been familiar with, shut down the operation for 10 weeks.
Difficult. If we're shut down now, it would be the double whammy for a really tough year, and it would be bad.
Bangs Islands continues to bring mussels to market right now because it's able to give samples from each shipment to a state lab for testing. And so far, so good. But only the larger aquaculture lease operations like this one have that capacity. Early this month, the state instituted a broad closure of shellfish harvesting in the bay. Mussels, scallops, oysters, quahogs, and clams. For smaller outfits who can't do their own testing, such as Jared Lavers, who digs for wild clams in Freeport, it's a matter of finding other means until the bloom subsides.
I have since hopped on a couple different lobster boats to try to fill in the gap, but I'm not able to make as much money as I normally would.
It's unprecedented to have a major biotoxin closure like this in December.
Cole Canwit directs the Public Health Bureau of Maine's Department of Marine Resources.
We fully recognize that people are out of work. You know, right before Christmas, I think it's particularly terrible for families who depend on clamming livelihood or shellfish livelihoods.
But given the stakes for public health, there's not much choice, she says. In the earlier blooms of pseudonychia, she says, the state had to play catch-up after recalls of several shipments of shellfish that might have been exposed before the threat was detected. Now, she says, more frequent testing for the algae and for the toxin buildup in shellfish is becoming the norm. When this bloom first surfaced, regulators moved quickly to impose precautionary closures. Now, she says, it's all hands on deck for state regulators and scientists.
It's not like red tide where we have decades and decades of experience managing this. We don't have any historic data here. So we're trying to gather as much information as we can while these blooms are going on.
The biological characteristics of the particular strain of pseudonychia in question, Pseudonychia australis, are not well understood.
The reasons they produce the toxin, we just don't know.
Mark Wells is a marine science professor at the University of Maine at Orono who's been studying toxic blooms on the West Coast for years. He says the recent East Coast blooms may be associated with temperatures in the Gulf of Maine's waters, which are warming faster than most water bodies worldwide.
We're wondering whether the warming in the surface may actually be selecting more for Pseudonychia, so that in the fall, when the bloom happens, there's more of a chance that Pseudonychia will be the ones that are blooming.
The uncertainty about the wheres and whens of toxic blooms has mussel grower Matt Moretti and others in the industry strategizing for the future.
We're trying to build it into our business, some redundancy, some geographic separation, to get out of a high-risk area and into a lesser-risk area, or at least an area that has a different sort of time scale of blooms.
Redundancy will be costly, but worth it, Moretti says, to protect the business against the unpredictability of a changing ecosystem. Regulators, meanwhile, continue testing samples at some 300 sites around the state, including the Damariscotta River, the heart of Maine's growing oyster harvest. So far, the toxic bloom has not turned up there. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Maine House Republican leader Ken Fredette is proposing a doubling of the earned income tax credit that benefits low-income Mainers, Mal Leary reports.
Maine currently offers a state-earned income tax credit equal to 5% of the federal tax credit. According to the most recent data available from 2015, the cost of the credit to the state was more than $10 million. Fredette's proposal would double that, and he would pay for it with unused federal funds allocated to the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families program. Fredette says his bill is aimed at helping the working poor and encouraging them to stay off welfare. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Thursday, December 21st, 2017. Thanks to Jennifer Mitchell, Mal Leary, and our digital team, Amit Morin.